This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
Welcome to the Africa Files podcast. I'm Heather Yunt. Three quarters of the world's mining companies are based in Canada. They operate all over the world, including Africa. According to the Canadian International Development Platform, of the more than $10 billion raised in equity for mining on the Toronto Stock Exchange in 2012, 16.5% of that was for projects in Africa. But this interest in Africa's natural resources has raised questions about the impact mining companies are having on local communities. Jamie Neen is the Communications and Outreach Coordinator at Mining Watch Canada. I asked him to tell us more about the situation of mining companies in Africa.
Well, there's a couple of different aspects to it. One is that Canadian mining companies are the largest single presence in terms of national presence in Africa in a number of countries. So even though there's more Canadian mining investment, for example, in Latin America, there's a large enough portion of Canadian mining investment in Africa to outweigh Australian, British, even South African interests. And Canadian mining companies are all over the continent, in everywhere from Eritrea to South Africa to Senegal, and involved in everything from basic exploration to advanced mining and some of the largest mines in the world. So it really covers a whole range of operations. It also covers a whole range of environmental and social impacts.
Why is it that there are so many Canadian mining companies working in Africa?
Well, I think it's just a reflection of the Canadian dominance of the mining sector, that three quarters of the mining companies in the world are registered in Toronto, and a large portion of the mining capital in the world is generated in Toronto. It's skewed a little bit because a lot of the Canadian companies are smaller companies, and you know, the really biggest global companies are mostly not Canadian. But beyond that, most of the deals are done in Toronto, and there's a number of reasons for that. One is that the financiers in Toronto are quite good at that. They know the industry. They know how to do various operations. But it's also a reflection of the support that the Canadian government provides for the mining sector, both in making sure that they have political support, that Canadian ambassadors basically act as salespeople or representatives for Canadian mining companies all over the world, including Africa, pressuring local authorities for everything from permits to legislation that favors foreign mining and specifically Canadian mining companies, and also ensuring that there are tax treaties or contracts in place that allow the mining companies favorable treatment. And then, of course, there's the disclosure requirements of the Toronto Stock Exchange itself, which are fairly relaxed on the world scale and apparently are not terribly well enforced.
What are some of the issues that you have seen that come up with mining companies?
Well, I think the primary one actually has to do with the economic and social impact of bringing large-scale mining into an area where it will displace either farmers or small-scale miners or, in some cases, a forest reserve or a nature reserve of some kind. And so in Tanzania, we've had the Selous Game Reserve boundaries redrawn to allow uranium mining to proceed because they're inside the park. And that has interesting repercussions because the villagers outside the park are already having problems with lions and elephants that used to be happy inside the park and are now being displaced by the mining activity. That's a fairly simple example, but it really has a huge impact, both in terms of displacing people physically out of the mining area, either by physically taking their land or by making it impossible for them to live there because of the dust and the blasting and the often the loss of groundwater that they depend on for drinking water. And then you have people coming into an area looking for work, looking to sell everything from goods to drugs to sex around a mine site. So it really has a huge disruptive social and economic effect. And it tends not to pay either locally or nationally, because the mining companies are very good at making sure that they can repatriate their profits so the investors benefit, ahead of either the local affected community or the national government that is supposed to be collecting taxes and providing services to its citizens. And that's becoming a really big issue.
In 2011, the federal government announced a plan to deliver international aid through partnerships between nonprofits and Canadian extractive companies working in Africa. Are those effective in what you've seen?
Well, they're effective in promoting mining. They're effective in marginally in funding the NGOs and the programs that they're delivering. They're very effective in disrupting the ability of local communities or NGOs in actually pushing for accountability for those impacts from the mining companies, because nobody's going to listen to them because there's Canadian NGOs and Canadian government support going to the mine. So how could there possibly be anything wrong? It's really not very effective in terms of delivering benefits to either the country as a whole or the local community, because it's still essentially in the hands of outsiders. So between the mining company, the foreign Canadian NGO, you know, who, of course, they say they're responding to locally identified needs, but they're still the ones managing the projects.
In 2008, Alain Deneau and Eco Societe published a book called Noir Canada, which rounded up human rights allegations against some Canadian mining companies. Barrick Gold and Ben Rowe sued Alain Deneau and Eco Societe for those allegations. What was your reaction to that when it happened?
Well, unfortunately, I have to say it was predictable, because Barrick in particular is quite litigious and tries to protect its image. I think that's gotten harder and harder for them to do as the reality of their operations is more widely known. But if you want to say anything about Barrick Gold in particular, but Ben Rowe as well, or any other mining company, you need to be very careful about your documentation. And, you know, we learned that early on, and we're very careful to make sure that we know what we're not only that we know what we're talking about, but that we can actually show where we got that information from. And Alain's book was more of a compilation and a reflection on the research that they'd done, rather than a direct representation or a direct research piece, and so that was how they got into trouble. You know, it wasn't just a libel suit, it was actually a lawsuit against, you know, what was called a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation, not only to keep the information out of the public eye, but to punish and prevent other researchers, other writers from going down that route. So, you know, not just to punish Alain Deneau and Eco Societe, but to intimidate anyone who was thinking about writing about Barrick Gold. It works very well, because nobody wants to say anything about Barrick Gold, whether it's true or not. They're afraid that they won't have the documentation, and even if they do have the documentation, that they'll be called in front of a court, that they'll at minimum have to spend days and days fighting with Barrick's lawyers about the content of what they're writing, and it's easier to just stay away. So it's left it up to student activists who don't have any assets and don't really care to go out and demonstrate and you know, put up their own website about Barrick and so on.
What do you feel needs to happen in terms of Canadian mining companies in Africa to improve the situation for local people?
Well, two things need to happen. One is the kind of legal accountability that we're talking about here, so that there's clear requirements on Canadian mining companies when they're active internationally to pay their taxes, to respect local laws, but also to respect the Canadian standards, human rights conventions that Canada has signed on to, that we really should be implementing. We're supposed to be implementing. We've made that commitment to the UN, and you know, or OECD commitments that Canada's made around bribery, or around the behavior of multinational corporations that we're not living up to. But the other aspect is empowering communities and supporting community groups and organizations on the ground, you know, essentially backing them up in those struggles so that they're not on their own, so that they're not fighting against not only their own government that's, you know, in bed with the investors, but is actually, or just in a weak position, because a lot of these governments may be well-intentioned, but they simply don't have the capacity, they don't have the power to negotiate a strong deal with a transnational mining company that may be larger than the country is itself. Those are the communities and the institutions that need our support. There's really good work being done by Africans, and one of the things that really gets lost in the view from the West, from North America, from Canada, is the view of Africans as actors in their own right, in their own land, in their own communities. And there's incredible research being done. There's incredible work being done to build up community organizations, community-based monitoring, and the sort of grassroots accountability where people can come together and make their own demands of the mining companies and of their own institutions, both the traditional institutions and the governments, about how they want things to go, and whether that is not mining and allowing people to continue farming, or making specific demands about if a mine is going to go ahead, then the environment will be protected and local people will be protected, and there will actually be benefits flowing. So that's really rising as a chorus across the continent, and governments are responding and trying to renegotiate these bad contracts and bad mining laws, and you know they need our support in that as well.
That was Jamie Neen from Mining Watch Canada. He oversees the Africa program. Well, the book Noir Canada, written by Alain Deneau, and the resulting lawsuit instigated by Barrick Gold and Ben Rowe, are the subject of a recent documentary funded by the National Film Board of Canada. I got in touch with Julien Fréchette, the director of Silence is Gold, to learn more about his experience covering the lawsuit.
I didn't meant to do a film specifically about a mining issue, in the sense that if you go back in Quebec, where I come from, in 2008, there was this discussion about what we called slap suits, you know, so companies using the judicial system to sort of hijack it and make people silence. And so there was, you know, this ongoing discussion in the public sphere about slap suits. So I got interested in the subject of, you know, those abusive procedure. And so I start digging for case in Quebec, and then all of a sudden, you know, that case came up. Noir Canada was a book reporting dozens and dozens of allegations regarding Canadian mining companies in Africa, especially in the period of time, it was like the 90s and early 2000 years, a period in which Canada was a really present country, I think, in Africa. It was a big case. It was big allegation dealing with the Congo, which is a really complicated topic. And that case was huge because you had, you know, basically lawsuits, and that was almost a caricatural in the sense that you have the biggest gold company in the world suing a really small publisher. How can you actually think that they could defend themselves properly if they don't have money to defend themselves? It's funny because the lawsuit itself gives more coverage, in fact, to the issues. And so I took the train while it was moving and, you know, start documenting the procedure from the defendant side.
What did you learn over the course of doing the film about the situation of Canadian mining companies in Africa?
What I didn't know is the role that Canada is playing in the world, you know, as the mainly, I should say, some sort of like the paradise of mining companies, because they are pretty much all 75% of mining companies are registered in Canada. Also, when I was talking with Alain and other people about the role that Canadians are playing without really knowing, in fact, sometimes through our personal RSP, We are financing some of those companies, Canadian mining companies operating abroad, and that can be associated with some allegation of abuse. And I didn't know about it.
And what were some of the allegations that Deneau was making in his book, Noir Canada?
Well, I can't repeat, right, the allegation, because that's the allegation that got him into trouble. What I did in the film is basically just follow the case, because it would be tricky, anyway, to repeat or try to prove or disprove the allegation. So the aim of the film was more to follow the legal proceeding going on, but giving, yeah, a little glimpse of what he said. Well, it was dealing with Tanzania about the story of Bulyanhulu, which is a story that I think you can find plenty of stuff that has been written on Bulyanhulu. But you got to be careful about what you're saying about Bulyanhulu.
Tell me about the outcome of the case.
So, yeah, after 3.5 years, almost 4 years, they never went, you know, in French, on say au fond. They never went in trial. In fact, it was only just legal proceeding from the beginning. They never went into the core, I should say, of the lawsuits anyway. So certainly it shows that in the case that they never went into trial, that it raises a question about justice, in the sense that, you know, it took that long, in fact, to go to that point. And, well, what bugged me a bit is that Noir Canada was not a book, in fact, written against a company or another. It wasn't a book dealing especially with Barrick or Banneril. It was a book dealing about various allegations and dozens of companies. And we only heard of two companies, right? We heard about the two ones who sued the authors and publisher, but we never heard of dozens of other allegations. So that's, but the book has been withdrawn from sale, but is still, I think, in libraries.
What do you want people to take away from the film?
Well, obviously, I want people to react. I want people to discuss those issues. In Quebec, the case certainly contributed to raise the awareness towards abusive proceeding. There has been a law in Quebec that was passed towards abusive lawsuits. We are the only province in Canada to have done so. Although it's really a first step, at least the questions and the issue was addressed by the government. And so in Quebec, we did something, but the issues, I think, remain whole in the rest of Canada.
Julien Fréchette is the director of the recent documentary Silence is Gold. Eco Société and Alain Deneau settled with Barrick Gold out of court in 2011. The settlement involved a payment to Barrick Gold and the end of the publishing and printing of the book Noir Canada. I'm Heather Yunt, and this has been an Africa Files podcast. Africa Files is a network of volunteers committed to promoting alternative perspectives of African issues. Find out more at africafiles.org.